In this first hour, Gail Walden is with us. She's a journalist. She's done journalistic writing. She's written and published fiction and poetry. She has taught creative writing various places and right at the moment is teaching at the University of New Orleans in their MFA program, kind of a distance. This is sort of a distance learning.
A low resident program, okay. Yes.
We will get some of her book recommendations here and talk with her in the first hour. So she's brought some books with her. And I also want to make sure that people who are listening know that also if there was a book that you have read recently and you'd like to recommend it, that's great too. That's all, you know, part of the deal.
Yeah, and because this is an interactive book recommendation show, I wanted to add another little thing. I've been reading the New York Times book paper cut blogs, and they've been doing a couple interesting things that people write in about, and one would be literary deal breakers. What book could you see on somebody's shelf that on a second date would make you...
You would not want to have anything to do with that person from then on?
And okay. A surprisingly amount of people have... Ayn Rand. We had a little discussion about the correct pronunciation. Rand. Yes, that's a deal breaker for a lot of people.
Really? Okay.
So if anybody would like to call in with what a deal breaker would be for them. The other thing is lines in books, which stuck out, and several people, including myself, did the last line of The Great Gatsby or the first line of
Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Flannery O'Connor was well represented. But if you have Kurt Vonnegut also, if you have a line from a book that you think sort of capsulizes something for you, you could feel free to call in and give that line also. Good. So just try something new.
I like the literary deal breaker. I'd have to think about that for a little while myself. Okay. Well, and definitely we'd like to hear from people this morning. So if you want to play on this game, or maybe you have a book that you'd like to suggest, 333-9455. That's the number to call. And it's just the number to call to be on Focus 580. No one will bushwhack you and try to get a pledge out of you. It would be great if people would pledge, but that's not required. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Okay, so what have you been reading lately?
I'm starting out with my memoriam. Remember, I'm instituting many new things on the show, a memoriam. I did Grace Paley last time. And this, it's Poetry Month. Mm-hmm. And this is an author people will likely not have heard of unless they lived on the West Coast in Tucson or in Boston. John Anderson, poet. He died a few months ago. And he influenced a lot of other poets. He had a small booklet that he wrote, 50 instructions on writing poetry, one of which was to say the hardest thing. And so he influenced David Rivard and Tony Hoagland, a lot of contemporary poets that people who don't read poetry probably won't know either. But he was a big fan of the ampersand. He started people writing using ampersands in poets, and several people. And he had a few books, one called In Sepia, one called The Milky Way. And while his influence, I think, lasting, the books will probably be hard to find, but I'm sure somebody's going to put together a collected work of his poems shortly. And I wanted to read one of his poems. He was given to sort of a resigned vision of life, but also beauty within that resigned vision. And this poem is called In Autumn. At day's light, I dressed my cold boy and went out. Calling the dogs, I climbed the west hill, threw cut wood down to the road for hauling. Done, there was a kind of exultation that wanted to go on. I made my way through briars and vines to a great stone that rises at the hill's brow, large enough to stand on. The river below was a thick, dark line. My house was quaint. I sat, not thoughtful, lost in the body a while, then came back the way, winding through strands of cedar and pine. I can tell you where I live. My grief is that I bear no grief, and so I bear myself. I know I live apart. But I have had long evenings of conversation, the faces of which betrayed no separation from a place or time. Now, in the middle of my life, a woman of delicate bearing gives me her hand, and friends are so enclosed within my reasoning, I am occasionally them. When I had finally stood high above the house, land, my life's slow dream, For a moment I was required to turn down those deep rows of cedar and would have gone on walking endlessly in. I understand by the body's knowledge I will not begin again. But it was October. Leaves in the yellowed light were altered and familiar. We who have changed and have no hope of change must now love the passage of time. So that was John Anderson.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you are doing some poetry. It's, as you say, it's April, it's Poetry Month. And, yeah. And from time to time when various people have been on the show, I think they've really made an effort to include some poetry. We've talked about all kinds of things. We've talked a lot about fiction and nonfiction, and people have tried to get some poems in it. And it's one thing that when I am pushed to read it, I think, well, this is really wonderful. And then but I don't know, reading poetry, it's just not, I do read a lot, but this is just not a part of what I even think about doing. And probably a lot of people would say that same thing.
I think it started out in the oral tradition a lot. And I think people are more likely to go to a poetry reading mm-hmm. than they are to actually sit down and read a book of poetry, or you tend to read a solitary poem. But poems do turn out to be important to people in times of trouble. At funerals, after 9/11, there was a huge proliferation of poetry in pages where you didn't normally see poetry. And, it's something I think. Actually, there's more poetry books published than there are short fiction books now. So there's actually a market for poetry. It's also easier to publish them. They're shorter. There's more people. But probably there's more people, as many people writing poetry as there are people reading poetry.
Which did you do first? Did you start
I started poetry first?
You did.
Yes. Then I switched to fiction later on because I realized sometimes people paid you $50 for a fiction. For a short story, and yet.
Well, if you can work out a deal being paid by the word, it's to your advantage to do something in the form of a little bit longer. Okay. Let's do another one here.
Okay. My first book is the fun read of the – it's called Black Olives, and it's by Martha Todd Dudman. She's also written a memoir about raising a difficult teenage daughter called Augusta Gawn. And this is, I believe, her first novel. And it's about a woman who – she's 50, and she has recently, within the last 9 months, ended a 10-year love affair with a man who she never really wanted to marry, but who was an integral part of her life. And she's sort of stunned by the loss of him and how she imagines his new life with a new woman. And she imagines running into them. They live in a small town in Maine, you know, and how she'll be dressed and how she'll be on a date. And when she finally sees him, it's at a grocery store she calls Ye Old Phony Grocery Store, and she's in front of Black Olives, and she suddenly realizes she doesn't want to see him, and she sneaks out of the grocery store and sees his truck. And the suspension of disbelief the reader has to have is she's thinking how, you know, her car's too doors away from his, and she thinks, how could he not have seen my car and come into the grocery store? I would have certainly seen his. And she kind of smells inside the back, and she sees him coming, and suddenly she jumps in the back of his truck, and there's this moment where, so, and he drives off with her in the back of the truck. She puts a bunch of stuff. He's a slob, which is one of the things that has bothered her about him, and she manages to hide. But you got to suspend a little bit of this disbelief because this is how. And so she follows him through the day. He stops and gets gas. He goes to his house. She ends up getting into the house. And so she is literally stalking him, and with also the suspense, and I don't want to give away some of the things of whether he's going to find her, whether he even knows she's there. It seems sort of hard to, and how casually now can she say, oh, hi. What are you doing here? But there's a few, she's really stalking the memory of the relationship, because now she's faced with, he's been in her imagination now for 9 months, not a real person, but he had been in her life for 10 years as a real person. And it's something that anybody who has ended a long-term relationship, I think, would, you know, if you could be invisible in the other person's life for a day and just follow them around and see what their life is like without you in it, that it's very interesting. But it's also interesting because it's a love about it's a book about mature love rather than these aren't, you know, you would maybe expect a 20-year-old to hop in the back of a pickup truck, but maybe not a 50-year-old. And so it's it's an interesting book, and it's really, I read it on a train to New York. It's a really good read for, you know, I guess beach, train.
Yeah. Okay. Good. And so again,
it's very short.
The title gives the again the title and the author.
Black Olives. Uh-huh. Which is basically just where she was when she sees
the guy.
There's not
standing for him.
I don't think there's
no
a huge
mystical black meaning to attached to that.
No, all I right. don't think so.
Okay, and also I want to mention for folks, if you're interested in the books that we'll be talking about, we'll have them posted on our website, so you can go to will.illinois.edu, will.illinois.edu, and go to the Focus 580 section, and we will have them there. Otherwise, you can give us a call if you want to suggest a book, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Jay Pierce, our station manager, has just stepped into the studio to sit with us for a minute or two.
I'm just engrossed in the last conversation. I was just imagining that the bad part of the relationship that made it end in the first place could be the pits and the black olives, I guess, or something. But having been through a couple of relationships like that, lengthy, you know, the stalking thing, the could you be invisible and find out what's going on is intriguing.
Yes.
I'm going to have to get this book. I can relate to this.
Oh, good.
I think I can relate to
convinced
this.
Convinced one person.
Where do you get a conversation like this? That's what I want to ask right now. Where else on the radio dial? Spin it around. Take a listen. See what's out there. Where do you get a conversation like this? And you get it on a regular basis on Focus 580. And throughout the course of a week, throughout the course of a year, you're exposed to so many different things. You get pulled into so many different things. You get a chance to call in and be a part of the program. And we want you to call in and be a part of the radio station right now. At a different number than the call-in number, it's 217-244-9455, because this is a listener-supported radio station. This is our spring membership campaign. And it's through campaigns such as this that we find the contributors and the dollars needed to keep Focus 580 on the air. Our goal for this five-day drive is $200,000, and we're a quarter of the way there right now. So that's fantastic. You can help out right now and push us a little bit further toward that goal by calling 217-244-9455. And, you know, if you've never contributed before and you've been listening to the program and you know you should contribute, why not join us right now for $1 a week? $1 a week. That's a $52 contribution at 244-9455. Be great. Or you can log on to willpledge.org and just think, a few minutes of your time and a few dollars will bring you hours and hours and hours of great conversation for the rest of the year. 244-9455.
And on top of that, ladies and gentlemen, if you call in and make a pledge, we'll send you something to read. Maybe you're looking for a little something new.
Maybe black olives.
Well, I don't know if we have that. We can't promise that. But we do have books that are sent to us for review purposes. And these are things, you know, we amass them from time to time. We give them, it makes us great points with the people we work with here, because sometimes we put them out and people at the station come and take the books. But we also, when we do these things, we're encouraging people to support the station. We do set some aside. So what we're saying is that if you'll call in and make a pledge at the $40 level or above, you can choose to have either fiction or nonfiction. That we can't let you, I'm sorry, we can't let you pick the titles. But just tell us which of the two major categories, and it will be something that's recent, something in hardcover, and we'll send along to you with our thanks. So just mention that you would like to have a book and which of the kind that you would like to have, and we'll do that. And we certainly hope we'd like to hear from as many people as possible. What we've tried to do over the past couple of years is shorten up the amount of time that we're doing Fun Drive. You know, we're trying to make them quick because we want to get back to doing our programming. You want to hear the programming, but we also need to have that support. So if you would call in and make a pledge, we would appreciate it very much. 244-9455. That is the number. And we're talking this morning here with Gail Walden. She's been here on the program before to do these book shows. She's done journalistic writing, fiction, poetry. She taught creative writing and has brought some books to recommend. We also have somebody here who's hanging on, and I don't want to make them hang on any longer. By the way, 333-9455 is the number if you want to give us a call. Suggest a book, you can do that. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Callers in Belgium over in Vermilion County here, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yeah.
I would like to suggest The Last Hurrah by Edwin O'Connor.
All right. And tell us about it.
It's a fiction political book, so it's pretty topical for this year. And I believe this was made into a movie in the late 50s, because this book came out in 1956. But it's an incredible book in that the style of writing is kind of a throwback to another era, as opposed to the style you read in the last 10 or 15 years.
All right.
And it's really refreshing to read that type of style of writing. It's a great book, The Last Hurrah.
All right. And I'm sure that I'm looking here on the Amazon website, and I know that it's available in paper. So it looks like it should not be terrible. I don't know if that book is even still in print. That's one question, maybe, because it looks like the ones they have are used.
Well, I got this from Interlibrary Loan,
okay.
My local library.
So go down to the library, do that. All right, very good. The Last Hurrah by Edwin O'Connor.
Yes.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Other folks who are listening, you want to make a suggestion, something to read, you can give us a call. Otherwise, we'll keep talking with Gail.
This next book I actually did borrow from WILL, one of the books that got sent to you, because I was interested in reading it, and I asked Harriet if you had it here.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Starbucks choice, and I was interested to see how a Starbucks makes their choice of a book to then put in every Starbucks store, which, as you can imagine, is good sales for the book. And it's called Beautiful Boy by David Sheff. And it deals with – he had written an article that eventually became this book about his son's – his teenage son's addiction to methamphetamine. And I was a little bit addicted to it, interested in it, because I see the commercials now on meth. That was not something that was around when I was a teenager, and now seems to be really around, and it seems fairly horrific. But and he does, because he's a journalist, he gives – a lot of research into just the effects of this on the body and how it becomes so addictive quickly. But I think I would recommend the book to anybody who is going to be a parent of a teenager. And also, anybody who has, and I can't imagine that anybody at a certain age hasn't dealt with somebody who has an addiction of some sort, you know, whether it's a spouse or a parent or a child or a friend. This is one of the best memoirs I have read about what that does to the people around that addiction and how you become insane yourself, because that becomes the focus of your life. Now, with a child, I think that's probably the worst it could be, because – and he thinks – David Sheff thinks that he's got this other family now. He had divorced – Nick is his son, and Nick actually also has written a memoir about his experience. He's now been sober for 2 years, but it took quite a long time. And he was an honor student and on the swim team in private schools. They were very privileged, but addiction is very equal opportunity. And they did – I think the recovery and the rehab might be so expensive that that's not necessarily equal opportunity. Mm-hmm. But David and his wife, Vicki, had divorced while Nick, the child, was at a fairly young age. And so he blames himself for this, what caused this. But he, at some point, he has another family now and smaller children, but he can't stop focusing on this addicted child. And he thinks his head is going to blow up, and it does. He actually has a brain aneurysm while he's writing the book. He has to learn how to re-speak. But the only thing he remembers is his son, who's out on the streets, shooting up something. I mean, he can't remember his phone number. He can't remember his wife's name. He remembers that he's worried about his son. And that just seems so. They end up going to Al-Anon. I think it's a really good book for anybody who's dealing with anybody who's addictive. It's well written. It's not hard to get through at all.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. I guess myself, because we do get a fair number of books that are books that essentially are memoirs, either personal memoirs or books about people or families that are dealing with just really horrible, terrible stuff. And I guess in part my initial reaction is, I don't want to read.
I know.
I don't want to read.
I
about
know.
That.
I have that reaction too, and I have. I think some memoirs are made up.
we know some memoirs are made up. Yeah.
I hadn't been, even though Carol, and I think reading the son's memoir would probably be a good compliment to that. I wasn't interested in reading that. I thought there'd be a lot of needles involved for one thing. But I just. But this. It's a good book. I'm suspicious of memoirs, too, and I'm suspicious of – but I think that it told me a lot about this particular addiction that I didn't know before, things I would watch out for now, just how this is proliferating. And I really think it's worthwhile. I was impressed with Starbucks' choice. I also was suspicious about how literary Starbucks was going to be, but I am impressed.
So there, I guess I know that in Starbucks you go in there and they're now pushing CDs. They also have books.
Yeah, really. And there's a woman who, I mean, that's her job. Is to. I think that would be a great job.
Just to be the good person
Seattle.
Who picks the books
yeah,
that Starbucks
the booksellers
is going
to have. Go to her, and of course, everybody, it's like the Oprah of coffee.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So again, tell us the title and the
author.
The
title is Beautiful Boy, A Father's Journey Through His Son's Addiction by David Sheff.
Sheff, okay, with two Fs. And again, we will have the books on our website, WILL.UIUC or WILL.Illinois, I guess is what we were doing it now, will.illinois.edu. If you want to take a look at it. And we did, well, we had somebody here. I'm sorry, maybe I kept him waiting too long. We are at about our midpoint already here, and we certainly are interested in having book recommendations from people who are listening. Maybe there's something that you have read recently that you thought was really good, and you'd like to call in and tell us about it, and other people who are listening. That's great. Same numbers as always. It's a different number from pledging. Same number to come here to the show, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good. Anywhere that you can hear us, that's 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you can give us a call, and we'd be very happy to welcome people into the conversation. And I think we are getting some more folks here set up. And maybe I'll just try and wait here a little bit until we get this first caller. And we, oh, by the way, maybe I'll also mention here this morning, we're doing this book show. We like to do this from time to time and always have a good time talking about books. We'll be doing it for both hours of the show. Gail is here with us for the first hour, and then we're going to make a change halfway through. And Kelly Strom will be here for hour number two. She's the collection manager at the Champaign Public Library. And her job, it's kind of like the woman at Starbucks, she's the one who decides what books the library is going to have. So she'll be with us hour number two. And we do have some callers here, a number of them. Let's talk with someone in Urbana and line number one. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I just want to say I really appreciate this kind of a show right here. I'm a voracious reader and a patron of the library and WILL. You guys are rock stars. But I do want to say that I usually devour about, I don't know, 2-3 books a week. And going through books this pace, I kind of have a high standard for what I actually call favorite. But about 2-3 weeks ago, I picked up one that just, blew my doors off. I'm actually going back to school to become an elementary school teacher, so what's dominating my reading list is anything that has to do with education or incentives to learning or that type of reading. And in one of my development classes, I was kind of reintroduced to the studies of Harry Harlow, and he's the psychologist that did the work with the Wire Mothers and talking about the effect of love and affection upon learning. Now, this kind of sounds like it's already heading like into a stuffy land, but this is a biography about both Harry Harlow and the work that he did at University of Wisconsin at Madison. And it was fascinating because when he started doing this work back in the 30s and 40s, the idea was, through people like John Watson and B.F. Skinner, that it's not good to be picking up your children. You know, just leave them alone. Find ways to meet their needs without handling them. And it was really kind of a stark outlook for children. And Harry Harlow, as he was becoming more and more educated, was starting to find out that this is an aspect of psychology that he was railing against. And he started formulating some very hard science methods to disprove this kind of harsh and inhumane kind of childbearing. And the work that he did is kind of talked about in this book. Now, where he was working was this lab that he cobbled together in Madison, and it was 600 North Park, but the way that the six was articulated, it looked like a G. So the title of the book is called Love at Goon Park, and it's called Harry Harlow and the Science of Affection, and it was by Deborah Blum. And she was a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, and when she put this book together, I was just amazed. It came out about 2-3 years ago, and his and Harry Harlow's life, as she writes it, mirrors his own work. For example, when he's in the throes of his first marriage, which was a love affair, he's doing the hardest work on proving the work of love in the development of human beings. And then later, he gets a divorce and spirals into depression. And he has works about the negative effect of love and how we suffer, and proving scientifically that it's not just attachment problems. It's that love nurtures. And then later on, when his wife dies, he does some of the harshest experiments. I don't know if anybody would remember the documentary work that was done with Harry Harlow, like the babies that were the baby monkeys that were rocking themselves inconsolable, which is just one of the most amazing and harshest images to show that, you know, we need love. And it changed all of psychology, how we view raising children with this one person. So if you do believe that it's a good thing to hold children, to be kind, that I think this book will give you some real insights into what it is to be a person. It was a book that just floored me. I'm probably going to be reading it several times over the next few years.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because now I'm getting the message that on the Afternoon Magazine, the author was interviewed about this very book.
Oh, you're kidding.
And so
I would have loved to have caught that.
Well, it's on the archives. It's in our online archives. So if you go to the Afternoon Magazine archives, I think you should be able to put in the name, do a search by keywords. I think you should be able to put in the name of the guest and find that show and then listen to it.
Oh, there's a reason I knew I liked you guys.
Well, we try.
Okay, thank you very much. I really do appreciate the show, and I'll let you keep talking to your guest and not take up any more time.
Well, thanks. No, I appreciate the recommendation. The book is Love at Goon Park, Harry Harlow and the Science of Affection, and it's written by Deborah
Blum.
B-L-U-M.
Yeah.
All right. It is, I am told here by the folks at Amazon, that it is available in paperback, and the book came out in 2004, I think.
Yeah, and it's about 300 pages, and I just sat down and had a very difficult time putting it down. Like I said, I know it sounds a little stuffy, but if you believe that it's a good thing to be nice to people, you have a person that took on an entrenched establishment, of psychology, and proved them all wrong.
Yeah. Well, great.
It's just amazing.
Thanks very much for the recommendation.
We appreciate
it. We have somebody else here we'll get to in a little bit. We also want to take a second here to encourage people to support not only Focus 580, but all of the other programs they hear on WILL. We're spending some days this spring raising money. This is the money that will pay for the programs that you value. Sometimes we like to suggest the investment metaphor. That is, yes, you're making the contribution, but what we're doing is we're taking that money and putting it into producing programs that will then come back to you. And we like to say that it is an investment that should return and benefits many times what you contribute, because we're taking the contributions of all the folks who are listening, putting them all together. That's our energy source that we are going to use then to make programming for you.
And it's David Sino approved.
Absolutely.
That return.
A very high return on investment.
There,
yes, David said, I approve. Jake Pierce is our station manager. He's here in the studio.
Hey, I want to follow up on the archives thing, because one of the things that you do when you call 217-244-9455 and you make your contribution of $1 a week, $52 maybe, you're helping us to provide those archives online at will.illinois.edu, archives of all of the locally produced programs, Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Sidetrack, Keeping the Faith, Media Matters, they're all there. And you know what else you can do? You can sign up for the podcast of them. And so if it's not convenient for you to listen to Focus 580 between 10 and noon, Monday through Friday, if, for instance, you have a job that you work 9 to 5 at, and they don't allow you to put it on your computer in the background or whatever while you're working, or, you know, maybe you're somebody who has to concentrate on your work and you can't be listening to the show then. More and more people tell me, David, that they download these programs to their iPods. And then when they're driving somebody somewhere, when they're commuting, when they're taking their walk in the morning or in the evening, or on the weekends, they sit and they catch up on the programs. And you can absolutely do that by going to our website. And that is another service that happens when you call 244-9455 and you make your contribution. And those who have kids know about paying, you know, $1 a download for songs that they cram into the iPods. I think my two girls were bragging about who had more songs. One had like 1,000 in their iPod. I said, that's like $1,000. That's a $1,000 thing that you're like throwing around here. And I'm like, oh, my God. I don't think I had $1,000 worth of record albums when I was, you know, growing up. Of course, they didn't cost $1 a song back then. You know, you buy a whole album for $4. But, you know, it's the cost of doing things is what it is. And my point is there are costs to this programming. And while we don't send you a bill and we don't make you put, you know, $1 on PayPal or whatever every time you want to download an archive of this program or a podcast, we ask you at these times to call 244-9455 and think maybe $1, maybe $2 a week. Is it worth it to you for what you get on the air and what you can get online out of this program, The Conversation? We like to call ourselves, you know, we're a meeting place. We converse. We bring up topics. We talk about books. We talk about finance. We talk about other important issues. We let you join the conversation. And it works because when you call 244-9455 and you make that $1 a week contribution or $2 a week or $75 and get a member card, you are becoming a part of that nucleus that helps to make it all possible for all of us to make a difference in the community. 244-9455 or go online to willpledge.org. I think that $52 a year, just $1 a week, is quite a bargain for all you get out of just this one program, Focus 580. And why don't you call right now and join us?
And if you call during Focus this morning, also with our thanks, we'll send your book. We have a lot of them we get from publishers, and we set them aside. And if you make a contribution at the $40 level or more, and that would include Jay's suggestion about $1 a week, just let us know whether you would like to have fiction or nonfiction. We're sorry, we can't let you say, I want a particular kind of book. We'll pick one for you and hope that you will enjoy that fiction, nonfiction, and we'll send that along with our thanks. Also, folks want to call in, make a suggestion for a book, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And our guest in this hour is Gail Walden. She's writer. She has done both journalistic writing, fiction, poetry. She's taught creative writing. Right now is doing that for the MFA program at University of New Orleans. Tell me again, what is it they call this? It's not
a low residency MFA.
Low residency. I like that. Yeah. That means you don't live there.
I don't live there, and many of the students don't live there. Many of the students live elsewhere.
So, and then is most of this done by exchanging?
Online. We exchange stories online. Most of it's in computers, and then we meet once a year. This year it will be in Mexico sometimes, and some students go down to New Orleans. There is faculty. Some of the faculty does live in New Orleans. It was a good thing. This was already set up before the hurricane, but it was good because the program kept going.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Well, and she's here suggesting some books, and we'll go again. What would you like to talk about?
I have so many. I'm wondering about I was thinking about the short story and how it's kind of fallen out of form. It doesn't really and I was reading, I always pick up the stories of John Cheever every couple years, you know, the collected stories. And I was reading this story about a radio that the wife tunes into and can hear all the other apartments around them. And it's horrible. Her view of life changes completely, but it goes on and on. And I thought, you know, you would never see a short story like this in the New Yorker or anything, which is where John Cheever used to be published. It just didn't have the form of a short story. And I think that's why we've gotten sort of bored of the short story. It's become. But I'm going to recommend Amy Hempel's The Collected Stories. She's been writing since the 1980s, and she was a student of Gordon Lish, who also was an editor of Raymond Carver. And she has some of the same minimalistic sentences that Carver had, that Hemingway had, but they're in a different they go in a different direction than they do, whereas Carver would focus on a symbol like a peacock where emotion would come through. Hempel focuses on people. And I just want to read a couple passages because they're passages that kind of show me how brilliant she is about dissecting humans. And in this short story, people are at a party of women. It's not really even a shower. It's not really said what they're there for. But one of the women has broken up or is breaking up with a man and not really happy about it. And her name is Jean and the man's name is Larry. And another woman said to Jean, "I'm reminding you that you asked me to remind you that if things got nasty, I was supposed to remind you that at first you found Larry a little bit boring." Jean looked genuinely pleased. She said, "Larry is the kind of guy who says, 'Did I ever tell you about the time I was attacked by a pack of sled dogs in Alaska?' 'No, I was in Fairbanks at the time,' he starts out," Jean said. "And 2 years later, you find out it was one sled dog and it was a puppy." "And his family, my God," Jean said. "These are people so boring it would have to come from a gene." I listened as Jean explained how scientists had already isolated Jean for shyness, so why not a gene for being boring? "The deeply boring give themselves away first by the exchange of facts," Jean said. "It's a family reunion. It's been 5 years. Relatives walk in. 'Hey, how are you? How'd you get here?' 'We took 101 South." There's one more passage that I think is about Larry, too. I become fascinated with this story with Larry. Jean was trying. Okay. That cracked Jean up, and then she seemed to think of something that cracked her up more. What she thought of, she shared with the three of us, and I ran straight to the bathroom and wrote down what she said. I wanted to be able to pass it along. Jean was trying to describe what she felt it would be like to be married to Larry. She said it would be like staying in a bad hotel and being forced to send postcards of it to your friends with arrows pointing to my room. I'm glad I wrote that down. So I feel like I know Larry, even though I don't even know anybody like Larry. And they're very condensed, and the plots come from putting together a lot of different characterizations and how they juxtapose at something like a party. I think she's very good.
And so does it all, though many of her stories, most of her stories, have that kind of sense of humor?
Yes.
Do they?
Okay. She is very very dry.
I think I got that boring gene myself. I feel that very strongly. We have a caller here. Before we went out of time, I'd like to get to this caller because she would like to recommend a poetry collection. So let's hear it for the poets. Line number one, the caller's in Marshall. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, just fine.
Oh, great. Well, I just wanted to recommend a poetry collection by a contemporary poet, Josh Bell, not the violinist, Josh Bell, the poet.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is No Planets Strike. It was published by Zoo Press in 2004. And I have one really short, playful poem that there was time to read it, if you thought that was appropriate.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. This poem is called Milk Division. I duct tape a border down the middle of every room, my side, your side, so I won't be able to watch the clock, and you won't be able to see the mirror while you dress each morning. And I'll have to lean across the plants to tell you what shoes you're wearing with what hat. It's a good system. If your toes wander onto my side of the bed, I'll keep them and raise them as my own. And one day, you'll come home early, and you'll catch me with your half of the milk. This is all in the future. God damn, you'll say. We should have tried this years ago.
That's very much. So how did you discover Josh Bell?
Well, he is a friend of the family.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
But he's teaching at Columbia University right now. And he's been doing very well, and this book is now in a second printing. He has an MFA from Iowa, Writers
mm-hmm.
Workshop, and this book is now going in a second printing. And so I thought I'd take the opportunity to share.
Well, that's great. I appreciate that very much. And we, I think anything, particularly since this is Poetry Month, any way we can encourage people to read poetry is a good thing. So, again, the title of the book is No Planets Strike. And the author is Josh Bell.
Josh Bell, not the violinist, the poet.
All right. Well, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We're coming down to the point here where we're kind of close to the end. Gail has two more books. She has one of each and saying, now, which one of these do you want me to do? Whatever you want. It's your show.
Well, I'm saying, how many more minutes?
Well, maybe like about 3-4 minutes.
All right. Well, okay. The most controversial book I brought in was called, it's got a title. It's coming out next week. It's got a title that I wish it didn't have the title because I think it's a really important book, and I think the title will turn some people off. It's called Toppling the Big Myths of Republican Politics, Great American Hypocrites. And Glenn Greenwald is a blogger at Salon.com, and he is a constitutional law lawyer. And every time I think something has gone wrong with media coverage of politics, and I have a vague idea of it, by the time I have even recognized to myself I have a vague idea of it, I read Glenn, and he has written a whole column about exactly what it is, clarified it, sourced it, and I think he's quite brilliant. And he takes the John Wayne, he actually, it's kind of brave, because he takes this icon, John Wayne, who I remember from, you know, the Duke, and remember from, and talks about how media has turned Republicans into this tough guy image that is the, John Wayne actually did not go to war. He did not, whereas, you know, Clark Gable did and Henry Fonda did, liberals, he didn't, but he started to be put up as a patriot, and how some of these guys who haven't gone to war become it's the Hollywood version of war. And there's many things in this book. Some is the moralistic versions of the Republican Party. But I think, and there's some, I have some complaints with some of the book, but I think it's very worthwhile reading. And I think it, just to read some of Chris Matthews' rants, which are in here, about masculinity, this faux masculinity of candidates and how feminized certain candidates like John Edwards get, is very insightful. I don't have cable, so I don't see Chris Matthews.
Gosh, really, what you're missing?
Yes. Well, I see. It's quite absurd, some of the things he says. But so, and also that, you know, the myth the Republicans are party of fiscal restraint, and how these myths get kind of propagated. And this is really a book on media literacy as much as anything, I think.
Well, that's good. Certainly there are no shortage of books of political commentary of all orientations, conservative, liberal, you know, whatever. So sometimes I think it's hard if you're looking for that, it's hard to pick something out of there that's really going to be
right. And I agree. And I think the polemics of some of them, it's just sort of like, okay, it's another either anti-Bush book or it's another. And this is beyond that. This is really about how we are looking at things in how we have all bought into some myth. I actually have John Wayne in a poem that I wrote recently. And so I am not immune to icons myself. So we all somehow take this on even without knowing what we're taking on sometimes. And so I think Glenn is brilliant, and I highly recommend this book.
All right. Again, this is the title of the book is Great American Hypocrites, and the author is Glenn Greenwald. And this is his second book?
It's his third book. He has How Would a Patriot Act and The Tragic Legacy.
Okay, so three books that definitely are commentaries on current American
three books,
politics.
But I've only read A Tragic Legacy. This is the best of what I've seen him, and also the most unusual that is in that genre.
All right. Well, we're kind of at the point where we're going to wind down here the first hour. Is there one more just real quick you want to mention?
I do want to mention this Letters to the World, which was put together on a list from a listserv I'm at. It's a poetry book of 259 contributors. It was a woman's listserv, 19 countries, 5 continents. And we talk about poetry over the internet every day. Some people are very prolific poets and have published many books. Some people are just starting. And somebody was a publisher and said, hey, why don't you why doesn't everybody just send me a poem and I'm going to put it into a book? And then some people volunteered to edit the book. And it came together in a very interesting way. And it's called Letters to the World, Poems from the WOMPO Listserv. And there's poets from Germany and Greece and Iran and Italy and Romania in it. And, people chose which poems they wanted to put in. And nobody said, no, we're not going to. They put in everything that people sent them. And it was just a very interesting publication. And I think it's turned out well.
And they're all women? All women poets?
Well, actually, there's a man in here. You don't have to be. There's one guy. You don't have to be a woman to be on the WOMPO, but we talk about women. And they tend to be a lot about women, the poets, although one has, the one I was going to read, which we don't have time, is about a male professor of a woman. So
okay. Well, people can look for that as well. And you go to our website, will.illinois.edu, and the books that Gail has suggested are there. And we'll be doing some more in the second hour, too. So we want you to hang around. Thanks very much
yeah,
for
thank
stopping
you.
By to be with us.